Good morning. If you would turn to Luke chapter 18, Luke 18, we'll look at verses 9 through 14, the passage that was read for us this morning. And we're going to be continuing kind of our series thinking about our prayer life. And Luke 18 gives us the attitude that we need to have in our prayers. So for the past few months, we've been looking at the teachings of Jesus on prayer, and it has been helpful, impactful to me in looking at how much he teaches on this subject, how he teaches how we need to pray, the motivation to pray, how we can pray. Improving our prayer life certainly was important to him, and it needs to be important to us. So the Gospel of Luke gives us more on this subject than any of the other four Gospels, the teachings of prayer. And I would go even further and say that the Gospel of Luke teaches more about prayer than any other book in the Bible. So it's here that I invite your attention again this morning. So just like Jesus did before telling us the parable of the judge and the widow that we looked at maybe a couple of weeks ago, he kind of gives us the point of the parable right up front, which if you're teaching is really helpful. Preacher, these are the points that you need to make. Now let's look at the parable. So when we look at this parable in Luke chapter 18, starting in verse 9, it's really important for us to notice what are the points that Luke says that Jesus made, and then we can look at the parable and make sure that we are looking at the parable in the correct way. So kind of outlining this these five verses here, it gives us the points of the parable that Jesus makes, and then in verses 10 through 13 gives us the parable itself about the tax collector and the Pharisee. And then in verse 13 or 14, he gives Jesus' conclusion. This is the attitude that you need to have. And this is the attitude that you see in the Pharisee and the tax collector as he kind of gives that conclusion or that principle that we see in this parable. So in verses 10 to 13, let's just look at the parable. We see two men going to the temple to pray. And one of these men would have been probably a regular at this time at the temple, and that, of course, is the Pharisee. The Pharisee were known, the Pharisees in general, were known to be extremely accurate and minute in all matters appertaining to the law of Moses. And Paul, describing himself, in Philippians chapter 3, verse 5, he says, "I was circumcised on the eighth day of the nation of Israel. I was of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews." And he says, "As to the law, a Pharisee." So Pharisees were known to be teachers of the law and very studious of the law. In Matthew chapter 23, and we'll look at Matthew 23 here in a little bit, but he says, speaking of the Pharisees, "You tithe mint and dill and cumin," these small things, "you tithe even those." And so they were very meticulous about making sure they obey every aspect of the law. And so I invite you to look at Matthew 23. Mark here in Luke 18. We'll certainly be returning to this passage. But in Matthew 23, it's as though Jesus kind of tears open the veil. The Wizard of the Oz, you kind of see behind the curtain. Well, this is behind the curtain of the Pharisee. And this whole chapter is basically Jesus exposing what the Pharisees are really like. Well, we'll just look at kind of the first 12 verses of Matthew 23. And in verse 3, he says, "I want you to do what they say, because they teach from the seed of Moses. They teach the law. So certainly obey the law, but I want you to do what they say, but don't do what they do. Don't act like them. And verse 4, it's Jesus says, they lay heavy burdens on others while somehow conveniently not having to do anything themselves. And so they'll stick the whole load on others while they don't have to do anything, not even lifting a finger. Verse 5, notice that they do all of their deeds, all of their good things, in order to be seen by others. They have these phylacteries, or in other words, they have this box on their forehead that has all these Old Testament scriptures in it, so everyone can notice just how much the scriptures are literally on their head. And so by wearing these things around, boy, that person's really religious. Or if they are going to give, Jesus says in Matthew chapter 6, they will blow the trumpets. They will get everyone's attention. And then once everyone's eyes are on them, then they will give. Or they say long prayers in order to be seen by others or heard by others. If you notice verses 6 through 10 of Matthew 23, it expresses again and again how they love the places of honor. If there is a seat of honor, they are going right towards it, and that's where they're going to sit. Or they love people calling them rabbi or great teacher. Yes, and can you keep going with my introduction of how great a teacher I am? They love those things. But notice verses 11 and 12, and we'll read those. In contrast to the Pharisees and how he has been describing them in 1 through 10, he says in verse 11, "The greatest among you shall be your servant." Now that is the exact opposite of a Pharisee. And then he ends with this, "Whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and whoever humbles himself will be exalted." That hopefully should sound familiar to us from Luke 18. The same principle that we need to view ourselves, the correct view, the correct attitude that we need to have is the exact opposite of the Pharisees. We need to see ourselves as servants. And if we are constantly humbling ourselves, having that humility, that humble attitude, God will be exalting us. We're introduced to the second man in the parable back in Luke chapter 18. And the second man is a tax collector. Now this also would be a fellow Jew, since he was in the temple, he was allowed in the temple. But tax collectors were really known as the exact opposite of a Pharisee. You have this very religious guy and this very unreligious man. The tax collector would be known as a traitor to his people. He is the one that's working for this evil Roman Empire, exacting taxes on people. And they were known for overcharging. If you owed $5, he would say you owe $6, and he would pocket that extra dollar for himself. They were known to overcharge excess money. They were in the same breath as Jesus describes in Matthew 9 and Matthew 18, as he would say, "You tax collectors and sinners," or "You tax collectors and," let him be as a tax collector and a Gentile. These were like the worst of the worst. And yet here these two men go to the temple in order to pray. So certainly as Jesus is telling this parable, in probably the only way that he could, everyone knows who the good guy is and who the bad guy is in this parable. Well, certainly we want to be like that Pharisee. We want to be like that, not like that tax collector. And so we are introduced to the prayer of the Pharisee. And interesting, at least to me, that the Pharisee's prayer is twice as long. It takes two verses to get his prayer in, while the tax collector is not even one. But notice what he says. He says, "I am so thankful that I am not like those really bad people that showed up to the temple to pray. You must be so pleased, God, that I am the one praying to you as opposed to all these other bad prayers that you have to be hearing. I am so thankful that I am not an extortioner. I had to look that one up. That's not a word I use every day. But I want us to think in comparing the Pharisee and a tax collector. I want that to ring true. Extortioners are those that practice by obtaining something, usually money, through force or threats. That's an extortioner who uses threats to obtain money. I'm so thankful that I am not unjust. You know, I care about what is fair. Those unjust people, they will cheat people any way that they can. I'm so thankful I am not an adulterer. They cheat on their spouses. They are terrible family men. They do what they want for instant gratification. They're very selfish and act on their sexual desires in a sinful way. Even as that tax collector. I'm just proposing this for you to think about. Do you think it's a possibility that the Pharisee has been describing the tax collector all along? Wouldn't that fit as a tax collector? Could it be described that he is an extortioner? Does he get money by force? Does the tax collector ever act in a way that is not fair or unjust? Maybe he is an adulterer to be lucked in the same breath as a sinner and a tax as a Gentile. Anyway, he is lifting himself up and saying, I'm so thankful that I'm not like these people or even that tax collector, which just personifies sin. God, let me tell you how I'm so much better. I fast, not once a year, which is required by the law. I fast not even once a week, but twice a week. And I give tithes. And as Jesus describes in Matthew 23, they tithe every single thing, every grain of salt, we might say. They make sure 10% goes to the Lord. Well, let me ask you a question. How would you describe this prayer, this Pharisee's prayer to God? Seems to me he is very proud of himself before the Lord. And how righteous he is, given what Jesus states about the Pharisees in their prayers in Matthew 6 on the Sermon on the Mount, how they go to the street corners and say these loud prayers. I don't think it is unimaginable that they would speak this prayer out loud for other people to hear and so that they could understand and so that they could see just how righteous a person this man is. But notice the things that he brags about. He brags about how he fasts and how he gives his tithe. He tithes everything that he has. Now, my question is, would these things necessarily mean that he is righteous? Another way to ask this question is, if someone fasts twice a week, does that automatically mean he is righteous? Or is it a possibility that someone could fast and not be righteous? Well, I think certainly that is a possibility. Just because someone tithes of everything they had, does that mean that they are righteous? Now, certainly tithing was commanded by the Lord and had to be done. But I'm just arguing and trying us to think, just because he does these two things doesn't mean he's righteous at all. It doesn't really reveal his heart. And the same thing can happen to us. We'll touch on that in a little bit. He focuses on how he is so much better than the worst sinner that he could find in the temple. It seems to me as soon as he sees that tax collector come into the temple, maybe the hour of prayer, oh good, I'll focus on that guy. because he is the worst of the worst, and so I am certainly much better than him. The tax collector's sins are judged by him as much worse sins than he has ever committed. So the Pharisee's prayer, like it or not, reveals his heart. You read the Psalms of David, and it is no wonder why God says, "This is a man after my own heart." So what does the Pharisee reveal about his heart with what he prays to the Lord? Well, certainly he enjoys putting himself above others by focusing on their sins and by focusing on his righteous deeds. The Pharisee reveals his heart also in what he does not pray for. So he reveals himself by what he does pray for and what he leaves out. His entire prayer is basically a praise to himself. Is it not? He does not ask God to forgive his sins, because what sins does God have to forgive when you compare me to that tax collector? He offers no praise to God. He is to the God that he is praying to. Well, that's one prayer in two verses, but look at the prayer of the tax collector. And he shows his humility not in just what he says, but the state in which he prays. Jesus notices three things about the tax collector before he even opens his mouth. He says he stood far off. Now this is in contrast with the Pharisee standing by himself. Maybe the idea is he felt better. The Pharisee felt better than everyone else. This tax collector, I got to stand by myself, because I don't deserve to be in the presence of anyone else. He did not feel worthy to go near the temple due to his sins. He would not even lift his eyes to heaven. What does that show you about his heart? Not even willing to lift his eyes towards heaven to pray to God. Well, he had a clear view of his sins and a clear view of how holy and righteous God was. Let me ask this question. Have you ever disappointed someone and then had to go to them to apologize? And is it hard for you to look them in the eye? If you're like me, you kind of go sheepishly, that's a word, to them, and you feel so bad, you have so much guilt, that you just kind of look down and, "I'm so sorry for what I did, how I hurt you." I think that's the idea here. He's not even willing to lift up his eyes to the God that he is about to talk to. And he beat his breast, which is a sign of humility. So these three aspects that Jesus details show his humility right off the bat. And then we get to his prayer. He says, "God, be merciful to me, a sinner." His prayer is focused on his need for forgiveness. We should be seeing a lot of contrast between his prayer and the Pharisee. The tax collector's prayer is shorter than the Pharisee's. The tax collector's prayer is focused on his sin, while the Pharisee's prayer is focused on his own righteousness. The Pharisee promoted himself, while the tax collector saw his need for God's mercy. While the Pharisee thought he could earn his salvation by all his righteous deeds, the tax collector knew he needed God's mercy. There's nothing he could do to earn his forgiveness. "God, be merciful to me, a sinner." And one went to his house justified, and the other did not. God heard and answered the tax collector's prayer. The tax collector went home forgiven. His sins, God remembered no more. His greatest need of being reconciled to God was met. The Pharisee was just as much in sin, if not more in sin, than he was before he came to the temple. And it's probably true that the Pharisee went home feeling pretty good about himself. And yet he was the one that was the most in need. Because of his pride, he went home worse off than the tax collector. Well, after Jesus finishes the parable, he gives us this principle of he who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. As I was trying to come up with some application points for this sermon, this lesson, I was like, oh, this will be easy. I have 2 points in verse 9, and I have my third point here in verse 14. This is a perfect 3-point sermon. The problem is, you think Luke would have told us what the point of the sermon of the parable is in verse 9 if it was the same as verse 14? Do you think Luke messed up? But he forgot to include the main point of this parable that Jesus says in verse 14. Well, the problem is, this is really not the point of the sermon. This is a principle. This is a truism that Jesus is saying. Because Jesus mentions this principle, this true fact, 3 times. And we looked at one in Matthew 23. Luke has already told us the points of the parable. Jesus is now helping us understand the prayer and the attitude go together. Let's look at those other 2 times where Jesus states this principle. We already looked at Matthew 23. Remember the Pharisee, he loves the glory, he loves exalting himself. And he says, the greatest among you is your servant. Therefore, whoever humbles himself will be exalted. Whoever exalts himself will be humbled. Certainly we see that. The other one is in Luke 14. And in verses 7 through 11. And remember that story that Jesus gives. He is invited to someone's house. So it's a pretty bold teaching. He is a guest, and then he talks about, you know, you people love the places of honor. And so if you see a seat of honor, you will rush to be the first one there. The problem is, what if someone more important than you comes in late? He's going to have to take your spot, and you're going to have to this seat is not for you. It's for this guy who kind of came in late. You need to move to the back. Well, wouldn't it be better if you just kind of sat in the back and then were asked, you don't need to sit back here. You need to move forward. Well, that would be a lot better. So is Jesus teaching us proper etiquette whenever we enter someplace to always sit in the back and just hope you get moved forward? Is that what Jesus is teaching? No, Jesus is teaching the attitude that we need to have. We need to view ourselves as a servant. We need to always have this attitude of humility. But isn't it powerful that Jesus teaches this principle by way of talking about 2 different prayers? He applies this principle to our prayer life. Our humility, or lack thereof, will come out in our prayers. Like it or not, our prayers reveal our heart. Our prayers reveal our attitude. The way we view ourselves will reflect the way we talk to God. How did the Pharisee talk to God? Look at me, right? Look how much better I am. Look what I do for you. You should just be so thrilled you have me as your child. How does the tax collector talk to God? Be merciful to me, a sinner. How do we view ourselves? when we talk to God? How do we view ourselves when we talk to the holy, holy, holy God? The God who created everything around us. Do we talk to Him buddy, buddy, as a friend would a friend? Or do we see Him and we say, boy, God be merciful to me, a sinner. Because that's exactly who I am, and I get to talk to this righteous, holy God. Jesus teaches the attitude that we need to have in our prayers. That's why Jesus taught to begin your prayers, "Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. How great you are. How pitiful I am." Well, let's look at the two applications then that Luke gives back in verse 9. The first one is, don't you think of yourself as righteous. Don't be like that Pharisee. And then he gives two ways in which that can be a temptation for us. How does the Pharisee come to the conclusion that he is righteous? The first one is he starts comparing himself with other people, right? I'm so glad I'm not an extortioner or unjust or adulterer or even as that tax collector over there. He is so terrible. A self-righteous person will always compare his best traits with someone's worst traits, right? We need to see that we all have weaknesses. We all have strengths. Something I might struggle with might not be a strong temptation to you, and vice versa. In another parable of Jesus, remember when Jesus praised a steward that basically stole and lost a bunch of money for his master? And yet Jesus say, his shrewdness is something that we need to take into account. Sometimes the people of this world are more shrewd than we are. They think far in advance. They look into the future better than we do. We all struggle. And I think it's so easy to sometimes come to this building where there's lots of Christians and we're so built up and we're doing all these great things. We're singing praises. We're learning more about God's Word. And then we go and enter that evil world out there. And we are so good and righteous and we just got to stay away from their evil influence and how pitiful and bad they are. Well, I'll tell you what, there are some things that they do a whole lot better than I do. Their strengths sometimes are my weaknesses. And so when I start comparing myself to them, what do I tend to do? Oh, I do all these good things. Well, look at them. They don't even go to church. Well, I go 3 times. The second thing that he did that ensured that he was more righteous is he recounted all of his good deeds. Not only do I not do what they do, look at what I do that they don't do, right? The two aspects of this. He went through the list of things he did so well, fasting, tithing. It's easy to feel good about ourselves when we list and concentrate on all the things that we're good at, or all the things that we do. I go to a church that takes the Lord's Supper every week and is very scriptural in what we do. We have Bible, chapter, book, chapter, verse in everything that we do. I read my Bible. I pray to God every single day. I'm very generous with my time and my energy. I am so good. A list of all these things that I do. What is that promoting? Just promoting myself. When we view ourselves as righteous, I can guarantee you we do this. We have lowered the bar. When we say, look how righteous I am. I would encourage all of us to read the Sermon on the Mount. And then you come out of that sermon and you say, oh boy, I am so righteous. Look how good I do every one of those things. That's the bar. Jesus raised the bar. We're good at lowering it until it's buried in the dirt. We walk across the dirt and we think we've done something great. We need to come out of this saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Final point that Luke mentions is don't look down on others. Certainly we see this in this parable of what the Pharisee did to the tax collector. You know who was the best at this? Who was the best at not looking down on others? Wasn't it Jesus? It's amazing to me, powerful to me, to see how he treated other people. Even in teaching people, it was the Samaritan that came and helped that man who was beaten half to death. It was the widow who wept all over Jesus and kissed his feet that he promoted over the Pharisee. Pharisee, which one was given more grace? Which one loved more? And here, Jesus chose a tax collector to be the model over the Pharisee. Jesus was known to be a friend to sinners and tax collectors. Jesus saw a group of misfits and saw them without a shepherd, and he had compassion on them. Jesus said he came not to heal the righteous, but the sick. I tell you, do we ever look down on others? Do we ever view ourselves as better, more righteous than those around us? When we see ourselves as the benefactors of God's grace, when we see ourselves as needing God's grace just as much as anyone else, this becomes easier for us. But as soon as we start seeing ourselves as better, more righteous, we'll fall into this trap every time. Our goal is to see others as lost. Our goal is to see others as needing God's mercy just like we needed God's mercy. It should not matter to us how rich or poor or color or race or their education or their status. Those things don't matter. What matters? God's grace. And how we are all guilty of sin. We are all sinners. We are all in need. We sing that song. We are all in need of God's grace and mercy. One of the most powerful texts to me is in 1 Corinthians, where Paul is kind of describing the membership of that church. And you remember what he says about them? A lot of you were very wicked sinners. And he gives a list of all these sins. And he says, such were some of you. You know what I struggle with sometimes? Is seeing someone as a terrible sinner and saying there's no way he would ever respond. Or seeing myself as more righteous than someone else and say, boy, I'm glad I'm not like them. You know what this parable did to me? It hit me up the side of the head. Because so many times, I connect more with that Pharisee than I did the tax collector. May we all see ourselves as saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Because that's exactly what I am. I need your mercy. I need your grace. Help me to tell others that they can have that same gift, that same amount of love that you bestowed on me, that they can have that as well. If God can forgive me, he can forgive you. May we take this message and we take this attitude, and may we learn in our prayer life to be more like that tax collector than that Pharisee. If there's anyone here who needs to respond to the gospel and needs to make their life right with the Lord, we invite you to come forward now as we stand and as we sing.